From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. And once again, here's your host, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Now, this week we've been reviewing the 2008 presidential election, and the time has come to pay some attention to the guy who won it. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me's first mention of the 44th president of the United States came in May of 2004. This was back when we did our show in a studio without an audience. We used an amusing story out of the White House as an excuse to make some jokes about a man who wasn't going to go anywhere as long as he had that funny name. Paula, the latest issue of The New Yorker tells the tale of Illinois Democratic Representative Jan Schakowsky. She says that at a recent meeting, President Bush mistakenly thought that she was campaigning for whom?
Kerry?
No. I'll give you a hint. Remember, this is what President Bush thought
right. She
was doing, and which is surprising because last we checked, caves along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border are not in any congressional district.
Bin Laden?
Yes, actually. Osama. Schakowsky was wearing a button for Illinois Democratic Senate candidate Barack Obama. She says that when President Bush saw the button, the look in his eyes told her what he was thinking. She assured him it was Obama with a B, not Osama with an S. Now, it brings up a question, this incident does. How do you get elected to statewide office if your name sounds just like public enemy number one? So we have solicited some unsolicited advice from NPR's Bob Garfield, host of On the Media and also, of course, a longtime columnist for Advertising Age magazine. Bob, welcome back to Wait, Wait.
Thank you, Peter.
Now, from an advertising point of view, somebody comes to you with a product named Obama. What do you do?
Well, the first thing you do, of course, is panic.
Yes.
And the second thing you do is promise the impossible, and that's what I'm fixing to do. I promise you that if he would just follow this two-tier advertising program, he can mitigate all of his image problems.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, I think what he needs is a zippy slogan, you know, something with punch. I'm just thinking out loud here, okay? Obama, not that terrorist dude, it's Obama with a B, duh. Okay? Would be one suggestion.
All right, that's good. That's pithy. That's pithy.
Hey, how about Sweet Home Obama? Huh? Yeah. And third, I think maybe just more directly, 99% fanaticism free. But I think a slogan is not going to do the trick. He's going to need a campaign commercial that's going to be able to position him well with the voters. And what I'm thinking is, okay, now you've got to visualize this. You see a group of people with those name badges, like at a convention, and one, and the voiceover says stuck with a goofy name, and then you see some guy named Egbert because his badge says Egbert, and a woman named Gertrude, and maybe a little baby that says Apple, and then the voiceover goes, "Oh, bummer, need a Democrat in the Senate? Obama."
Bob, we'll forward your number to the Obama campaign. Bob Garfield is the host of NPR's On the Media and, of course, as you heard, a brilliant creative genius when it comes to the art of advertising. Bob, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name.
Of course, Obama managed somehow to overcome that particular handicap and was elected to the U.S. Senate after making his national debut with the keynote speech at the 2004 Democratic National Convention.
But Obama reached out to voters in other ways, too. In 2006, a young journalist named Nicholas Lovelady told the story of how he had once covered an Obama press event in Illinois. Lovelady brought a date to the event in the hopes of impressing her. But Senator Obama mistook Lovelady for a student, even commenting on his, quote, baby face. Well, Lovelady never saw the object of his affections again and swore, in print, he would never support Barack Obama. Well, we at Wait, Wait called Obama's offices asking for a comment, and instead they gave us an exclusive. This tape, which we played on our show in November 2006.
Lovelady Newsroom.
Is this Nicholas?
This is he.
Nicholas, this is Barack Obama.
Hey, how's it going?
Man, I'm calling to publicly apologize for messing up your game. I read that. I felt terrible. I didn't know there were any ladies around.
Oh, man.
I just wanted to let you know that you know, I'm deeply sorry. And, but if she was that superficial, she wasn't.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it.
Hey. Okay, man.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye bye.
Eventually, he started winning over voters en masse, sometimes through untraditional methods, as we discussed in February of 2008.
Mo, some commentators, including us, as I said, have been criticized by Barack Obama supporters when we suggest his campaign is becoming a personality cult. Well, I'm sure there's another good explanation for what happened at an Obama rally in Texas on Wednesday when the candidate got a round of applause from the 17,000 people in attendance just for doing what?
Oh, was it for sneezing or clearing his throat, or it was for something like that?
Yes, he blew his nose.
Okay, yeah.
He told the crowd he had a cold, causing his hordes of loyal supporters to run around trying to get one themselves. And then he apologized to the crowd. He turned away from the mic. He pulled out a hanky or Kleenex, accounts differ, and blew his nose, getting, of course, a round of applause. He then whipped the crowd into a frenzy by sneezing, coughing, and then, in the kind of brilliant rhetorical coup that he's become famous for, he hucked up a loogie.
Man, if he...
which is now selling for $250,000 on eBay.
You know what? It gave the crowd hope.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth when you sneeze. Don't put them funky things on me.
The man himself came by our show in August 2005, after his election to the Senate, but before he started his presidential campaign. He still had the aura of a rock star, though, and so we were flattered and alarmed to discover that he listened to our show.
It is a thrill to be here, although, as I said, the main reason that I'm on here is because I remember you guys making fun of my name during the campaign.
Yes.
If I recall correctly, didn't you have some political consultant giving advice in terms of how I should change my name to...
Yeah.
Barack Smith or something.
Yes, he was Bob Garfield. He's a host of a show called On the Media. And frankly, I think you should have taken his advice and maybe you would have done a little better. But that's just, who am I, you know? You would have gotten up to like 90, 95% maybe if you had just been willing to listen to somebody else. I'm just saying. Yes, we are proud of the fact that of all the millions of people who've now made silly comments about your name, we were among the first.
You were.
Yes. Anyway, Senator Obama, it has been an amazing, shall we say, 18 months for you, in which you rose from relative obscurity as a state senator here in Illinois to, shall we say, the Elvis of the political world.
I thought you were going to say to 99th in seniority in the United States Senate, which is where I rank.
Really?
Yeah. When I walked in the first day, they handed me a bunch of pencils to sharpen.
Well, that was one of my first questions, which is because I'm just wondering what the Senate is like. Only you can have the navy bean soup and you get to ride the train beneath the Capitol as much as you want?
Well, the train is fun. I recommend the train, which is one of the bigger thrills in the Capitol. There is a sense of awe and grandeur when you walk into the Senate building. You know, each of us have these little desks that you can't write anything on because they're too tight. They're like the desks you had in elementary school. Parents, when you go to parent-teacher day and you're sitting there squatting, that's how it feels. But when you pull the drawers open, there are the names carved inside of all the previous occupants of the desk. And so in mine, you know, you'll see names like Lodge and Taft, but you'll also see names like Bobby Kennedy and Paul Wellstone, and it really gives you a sense of sort of the sweep of history that you're a part of now.
Are they supposed to do that? Or they...
You know, I suspect the first couple of guys weren't.
Yeah.
But now it's okay.
I don't think people realize the far reach of graffiti.
Are there little...
I was thinking about taking a spray can.
You know. Well, that's how we do it in Chicago.
As the only African-American in the United States Senate. We decided that might not... I might be lower than 99th in senior. So.
You should do that just to freak those guys out. They'd be like, can we say something? Would that be culturally insensitive? I don't know. you said you're 99th. Who's 100th, and what sort of mean that, stuff do you get
again? Who's that poor schmuck? <huh? Yeah. laughs> No, actually, that is my colleague Ken Salazar. And we came in. Ken's wonderful from Colorado. You got a Colorado in the audience. And
Mrs. Salazar, thank you for coming. Boy, I think the only thing worse than being 100th would be having your mom come out to see Mr. 99. some ruffled feathers in the Salazar home tonight.
Well, no, we trade off. My wife goes to Ken's events just to make sure we're always covered. The reason he ranks beneath me is because Illinois is a larger state than Colorado, so thank you, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Now, you may have expected just softball questions, but no, sir. No, sir. We're going to take you up in some of your positions. For example, you delivered a speech here in Illinois recently in which you came out at four square and somewhat, I think, provocatively against eighth grade graduations.
All right.
Sir, yes. My eighth grade graduation was the high point of my life.
Well, I tell you what.
So what's the problem with eighth grade graduation?
We're trying to prevent young people taking your career path. We want them to do something with their lives.
I didn't know you made such a speech, but I am all over that. I love that. My daughter had a fifth grade graduation, and they had balloons that said class of 2005.
That's my point. You know, I said at this speech, I said, guys, it's eighth grade.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't have the cap and gown. You give them a handshake, send them to high school, get your butt down and study. Yeah, you got a long way to go. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you get any flack for that? Did you get any, any people
saying, how dare
No, I think the parents are trying to figure out, why are we doing this? You've got the balloons, and you got the flowers, and the robes, and then you got to sit through somebody like me making some long speech.
Wait a minute.
Worse yet, the eighth grader valedictorian making the speech, and now we go on.
Wait a minute, hold on. Are you?
Where are they going?
Yeah.
They're going. They're going to the Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. So,
are you implying?
It's got to stop.
Are you implying that you? I didn't realize this. That you delivered that speech to a bunch of graduating eighth graders?
I did. No. I'm joking about that. It was actually at a Father's Day speech that I gave. Right. Yeah, I wasn't going to rain on their parade, especially the parents after they'd spent all that money on flowers and balloons. Yeah. They would have been really annoyed. Yeah. You know, there's a reason why I got all those votes. You know. Right.
Yeah, but where are you on preschool graduations? Because I love it when they have, like, you know, a graduation when all they've learned how to do is line up.
Well, as a father of a preschooler, my daughter's one of the better liner-uppers in her class.
I can see a little waffling here.
Senator Barack Obama, we are honored to have you with us, but we've also asked you here to play a game that we're calling this week.
You're in the Lunatic Hall of Fame.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Last Sunday, Wade Boggs was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, Boggs was undoubtedly one of the greatest hitters ever to play the game, but he was also one of the weirdest. We're going to ask you three questions about the obsessive compulsive third baseman. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Senator Obama playing for today?
Peter, he is playing for Bobby Larson of Duluth, Minnesota.
All right. Ready to go?
I am set.
All right. Here's your first question. Boggs was a man of many superstitions, the most famous being he had to eat chicken before each and every game. Which of these was another of his unbreakable pre-game rituals? A. He ran the bases backwards and in reverse order in order to, quote, wind it up so I can unwind it during the game. B, for 2 hours before game time, if anybody looked him in the eye, he'd twirl three times and spit. Or C, he took batting practice at exactly 17 minutes after the hour, never 1 minute more, never 1 minute less?
The answer is C.
You're correct, sir. Very well done.
That's what I'm talking about.
Thank you. Did you know that, or did you simply guess?
I actually knew that.
You did?
I know my sports stuff.
All right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, as you know then, for night games it was 5:17 with wind sprints at 7:17. The story goes that once in Toronto, the scoreboard operator switched the clock straight from 7:16 to 7:18, and Boggs threw up. Just a story. Don't know if it's true. All right. Now you say you know what you're talking about. That is... The Greeks had a word for it, sir. It was hubris. Let's see how it goes. In addition to his own rituals, Boggs believed that his success could be affected by what other people did. Which of these did he once insist was helpful for getting good at bats? A, his mistress not wearing any underwear when she attended the games. B, his teammates calling him Mr. Tickle. Or C, seeing at least one cloud overhead before the game that looked like his pet German Shepherd.
Now, this is a tough one. I'm going with A.
You're going to go with A, his mistress not wearing any underwear when she attended the games. You're correct.
Thank you.
The mistress, name of Margot Adams, she caused quite a ruckus and indeed inspired bumper stickers when she sued Mr. Boggs for palimony in 1988. She says that once she happened to attend a game sans unmentionables, and Wade went 4 for 5 that night, and he insisted that from then on...
Wait a minute. During the game?
During the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anyway, he insisted that from then on she go... Commando for luck. All right, let's see if you can go 3 for 3. Last question. He was also strange off the field, Mr. Boggs was. He once said that he avoided getting hurt by an assailant with a knife by doing what? A, willing himself invisible. B, making guttural noises like, quote, a cornered chimpanzee. Or C, promising to coach the knife wielder's son in Little League.
The answer is B.
The answer is B. No, it was A, willing himself invisible.
You know.
Yes, in fact, Mr. Boggs willed himself invisible. That's what he says anyway. The guy with the knife has never come forward to argue. So, Carl, how much of a Hall of Famer in this context is Senator Barack Obama?
He's in the hall, Peter. He batted 2 for 3, and that's enough to win our prize for Bobby Larson. Congratulations,
Senator. Happy to go.
Support for NPR. It comes from the Wallace Foundation, where arts and education leaders can learn about how to bring the arts to more people. Downloads at the Knowledge Center at wallacefoundation.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR to advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. BJ Lederman composed our theme. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Thanks to all of our guests that you heard this week and all the panelists who appeared with us as we covered all these candidates.
And we're looking forward to treating the new president with the same ignorance and juvenile senses of humor that we applied to the last two.
Thanks, Carl Castle. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will be back next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.